What's up, heretics? It's the Religion of Speed podcast, the show for budget-minded automotive enthusiasts by budget-minded automotive enthusiasts. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
Chris, I want to start off talking today about hybrids.
Hybrids? Yes. So that'll be a serious change of pace for us. We never talk about anything electrically powered.
You know, going into that statement, I was like, I'm going to just like make our audience be like, they're talking about hybrids. But yeah, you're right. We do this all the time. Like, nobody is surprised by this. But this is actually a cool hybrid.
It is.
Because it's a WRC car.
Yeah. And you know, it's really cool to see WRC doing this because, you know, even though they're not as popular in America as they are in other countries.
Yeah.
They really do spotlight some of the best drivers in the world.
They do.
And they're at the forefront of a lot of these technologies that are pretty specific to rally racing that you can't really apply as much to, you know, like an Indy or Formula One style race.
True. Yeah. Like the suspension technology and just the diff technology. Actually, I would say rally racing is like more trickle down than like a Formula One car.
Yeah. This stuff, you see these features pop up more in things in road cars,
right? Like torque vectoring all-wheel drive systems. I don't actually know where that started, but it wouldn't surprise me if it started in rally.
It sounds like it would have started in rally.
You would think so. Yeah. I mean, the proliferation of four-wheel drive in general or all-wheel drive did start in rally.
That did. And I mean, Subaru as a brand wouldn't exist without that.
And if you ask our friend Chris Heil, Subaru wouldn't exist if it wasn't for copying Audi's design of their all-wheel drive system.
You know, I remember him saying this.
Right.
And I feel like looking it up online, you find some contradicting information.
You really do. Like, did Subaru really just copy Audi?
Yeah.
Or did they just, like, what was it called? Convergent design or something like that?
Oh, so that you think both parties were on their way to reach the same conclusion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, which is funny because both of those companies are known for having some of the best all-wheel drive systems in the world.
Right. But I will say, I do think Audi came up with it first. But also, in the same sense, that's kind of what Japan does. Like, it seems like Europe invents it, Japan perfects it, and America tries to copy it.
Yep. And we don't usually do as good of a job as
Japan. Pretty much. But we got a little off topic already. Yeah. These new WRC Rally 1, I believe, is the class.
Yeah, which this is interesting. So these are hybrid rally cars that have to be able to run on a full electric mode for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Which is cool because WRC, you know, it being rally, it frequently drives through, you know, pristine nature scenes,
right?
Preserves, parks, things like that. And some people who live in those areas don't particularly care for WRC because they don't like, you know, once a year their park shutting down while gas guzzling cars go sideways through the trees at 90 miles an hour,
right? Or, you know, their little farming road that they take their sheep down gets closed up for a week and a half because, you know, a bunch of millionaires have to come through and race their $1 million cars.
Right, right. And just tear it up and then leave.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to fix that exact problem, but at least, yeah, they won't be making as much fucking noise in the testing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because people like us, if there was a rally that came through right by my...
Oh, right. We'd be camped out.
And it just, you know, banging and popping and throwing flames and stuff, I'd be like, this is amazing. I love my life right now. But we are the outliers here. So.
We are. You know what? Maybe that's something to get off topic again, because we never do that.
No.
Maybe that's something we should look into is like a Zillow for gearheads.
Okay.
You know, because that can be the issue. You know, WRC has to fight to use these tracks.
Right. Let's circle back around to that in a minute, because we got something we need to talk about here. That would actually be a really good idea. So I have ADHD. Don't let me forget that.
Gotcha. I'll bring it back up.
Okay. I do want to talk about these cars real quick because it looks like Hyundai, Ford, and Toyota are all making cars for this. And they look just like the top of the line rally cars currently.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like some watered down, you know, racing class. These are full blown crazy race cars. The new Yaris GR, by the way, looks insane in that camo.
Yeah, that looks like a lot like the camo we loved that was on the new Civic.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's very similar.
Yeah.
The Hyundais, they do really good, but they don't look as aggressive as, like, the Fiestas and the Yarises.
The Ford looks awesome.
Right? I'm really sad Ken Block isn't with Ford anymore because we're not going to see anything done with this in the U.S.
I love those headlights, though. That just looks great. It looks very European.
Right? I'm also sad we just don't get that Fiesta here at all. because
no version of it, huh?
No, because Ford doesn't sell cars here anymore.
That's true.
You know,
American company.
The current Focus is a lifted, like all-wheel drive crossover now.
Yeah, that's true.
The Focus Active or something like that. I don't even remember what they call it.
They're still calling it the Focus.
Yeah, I don't. I literally don't know what it's called. I don't care. It's not worth my time. But yeah, we mentioned just briefly, the thing is with these cars is not just that they're hybrid. The new rule that they're going to implement for these cars is in the liaison stages. Is that how you pronounce that word?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm bad at English. Oh. It's my native language, and I'm terrible at it. I failed Spanish because I couldn't even be bothered to learn another language.
Like, I'm still working on English.
It's true.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing a podcast. Seems like a great fit.
It's all right. We have listeners.
It's true. And I appreciate each and every one of them. But yeah, so there's stages in between. Like when you're doing a professional WRC rally, you'll have multiple stages, like two or three in a day usually. And between those stages, they actually have to drive those cars on the road to go get in between stages. They have to be roadworthy.
So they have to transport them
without
having to use a trailer.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And there's going to be certain sections in that spot when they're not racing that they have to be electric only.
Hmm.
So you're not going to, I don't think, maybe they'll add an electric only section to the races. You know, this is going to be their first year, so they're kind of figuring things out.
Yeah.
But I think this is more just to like prove capabilities, you know, and prove that the cars can do it. And prove that the hybrid system on board is capable of powering the car, too.
Yeah.
Because it's quite possible that, you know, Toyota, for instance, could just be like, yeah, it's a hybrid. And it, you know, makes a little bit more electricity, which they count as horsepower or something, you know?
Well, yeah, which, you know, that fits into racing. You know, it's like, right. Oh, hey, we did this. We met your rules. Leave us alone.
Exactly.
Don't make us add any more weight or complexity to our race car.
Right. So this is more of a test, I feel like, than anything. But
what's awesome is if it does trickle down into the actual race, this will allow them to test it in these environments.
Right.
Which is really cool because, you know, we don't want to see another thing happen like what happened to Dai Yoshihara at Pikes Peak.
Right, yeah.
You know, we all had high expectations for that Model 3 to be one of the top contenders, and it was the bottom of the rung because it broke.
And we've seen through Pikes Peak that electric cars in a rally-style race can do very, very well.
Yes.
In fact, I've said for a while that the electric cars that electric race cars we're going to see first are in sprint style races.
Yeah.
Like a rally race.
Because we're not worried about the battery life overall when it's going full throttle.
Right. You know, in a NASCAR race, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah. Well,
there's no battery in the world that can survive that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this would be the perfect thing. And personally, I think a bunch of low end torque and the ability to torque vector each wheel with electric motors is perfect for rally.
Yeah, this could ultimately be the technology that forces the change, just like Audi did with the Quattro and WRC.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, this is such a massive leap forward that the sport can only exist with this because it's not competitive not to run that technology.
Right. And, you know, we've said this before, if that future is what WRC becomes entirely, that it's all just electric, I will, of course, miss the flame-throwing monstrosities we've had over the years.
Yeah.
But, hey, that's the march of technology, man.
It is. It is. And, you know, there'll still be some historic rallies.
True.
Petrol-powered historic rallies.
Yeah. I mean, there's people out there that race cars from the 30s.
That's true.
You know, there'll always be lunatics out there racing old cars.
There's always that class. I don't want any more safety features. Leave me alone.
Right? I want to sit on top of the car with a leather helmet and goggles. Yes,
that's all.
Yeah.
Anything less is not pure.
So you mentioned earlier with this, the Zillow for car guys.
Yes.
To for people that don't want to live by a rally stage. Well, there's a lot of people in the world especially in America, they don't want to live anywhere near even a professional racetrack.
Yeah, and the sad part is a lot of these tracks have been around for a lot longer than the housing developments these people are moving into.
Very, very true.
Laguna Seca is probably the most famous example of this right now.
Yeah.
Because every year they have fewer and fewer days where they can run over a certain decibel level.
Yep.
Which, if you're racing, you're going to exceed just about any decibel level.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's Laguna Seca's been around since the 50s. There are these housing developments that were just put in, and now everyone's mad about.
Right.
The fact that they're hearing screeching tires and loud engines. It's like, you move next to a racetrack.
Right. I'm sorry that your realtor lied to you about how loud and how frequent the race cars go.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not our fault.
Right. And now all these collective HOAs are causing these tracks to either close down or run in a much more limited capacity.
Yeah.
Where people like us, I would love to wake up every day to the sound of a car going sideways.
Right.
Or an engine with no muffler on it just popping and banging going down the road.
Right.
Like, I'd love that. So maybe we do need that Zillow for car guys.
Right. Because then, you know, only us would buy those houses. Like here in Denver, we have the same problem kind of forming very rapidly with Bandimere.
Yeah.
Which is a professional NHRA racetrack. It's been there for decades.
Right.
It's one of the most beautiful drag strips in the world.
It really is gorgeous. It's carved into the mountain.
Right?
Yeah.
And you get the echo off the mountainside behind you.
Which is just beautiful. Is absolutely, for anyone who loves the exhaust note, hearing it echo back to you is just a fantastic sensation.
Yeah, it's awesome. But that also means that echoes to the housing development that's across the highway from there that they're building currently.
Yeah, so, currently building.
So it was bad enough when they were like, it was like a half mile away.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more. And now it's directly across from the drag strip.
And they're building it there, and they're not going to tell any of these people.
No.
That, hey, there's a drag strip right there, and this is going to be noisy all the time.
Yep. So, yeah. I truly do think Bandimere's years are limited, but that's why I wanted to talk about this story about Atlanta Dragway, which is currently closing.
Yeah.
Because some people say Bandimere's too big. It's, you know, too popular to close down. Well, Atlanta Dragway is an NHRA owned and operated drag strip, and it is currently being sold off to be turned into housing development.
Not even abandoned. It's being sold off to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's sad. You know, once we tear up that track, I mean, it costs so much money to build a new motorsport park.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the amount of money it took to build this, nobody's ever going to make that investment again.
Yeah.
Like you said, if it was abandoned, somebody could buy it, you know, because buying one that's already been made is way cheaper than trying to build an NHR, especially an NHR certified one.
Right. Which means that this surface has been meticulously prepared and maintained.
Right.
For years.
Now, to be fair, this isn't them getting kicked out. So from what I can tell from reading, and, you know, if somebody else has some more information, of course, always feel free to correct us. I might ignore you and say I'm right anyways, but please correct us.
But at least we can learn.
Right. No, I'm not that thick-skulled. I'll make corrections, of course. But it sounds like NHRA might be kind of hurting for money because they wanted to sell off Atlanta Dragway to pay for improvements to their other big ones, their other big NHRA-owned tracks. It sounds like they really wanted to find somebody else that would operate the track, but just nobody wanted to, I guess, or they couldn't find the right buyer in time, and some land development company probably gave them way more money.
Yeah.
Because land is worth a shit ton of money right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can also attribute this a little bit to the housing crisis because so many people are buying homes. The prices have gone up so much that people are willing to destroy things just to build more houses.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know what the housing market is around Atlanta, but like here and around Denver, even up north by where like our friend of the show Hamza lives.
Yeah.
You know, he lives way up north in those new developments, and there's new developments going up all over the place up there. And all those houses are, I don't want to say they're shittily built, but they're not greatly built.
Yeah.
You know, they're quick put up houses.
Yeah.
Cookie cutter houses. And they're going for, they start in the mid 400s.
Yeah. And I'm guessing a lot of them are going for $500,000 or more.
Yeah. And when you pack, I mean, even just judging by this picture, of course, a drag strip's quarter mile long, plus the runoff area, plus the pits and everything.
Yeah.
You could probably fit, oh God, I don't even know, hundreds of houses in there.
Yeah. Each at, you know, say 400,000 a pop.
Right.
I know the Atlanta area is, I've heard it's fairly equivalent to the Denver area as far as development, just because it's so big, the very metropolitan area.
Yeah.
But say it's half that and they're $250,000 a piece.
Right.
I mean,
it's still, that's so much money that it just, we can't compete is the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason I want to bring this up is because if you needed a reminder to support your local racetrack, this is another reminder. Go show them support. When they're doing fundraisers, throw them a few bucks. When they're doing, like, here at Bandimere, Wednesday nights, it's Test and Tune. Go there and show your support for, your track. Go run your car.
Yeah.
I don't care if you have a Honda Odyssey minivan. That thing will probably run faster than most of the Civics there anyways.
It probably will.
It'll probably run faster than my Fiesta, honestly.
It would actually be hilarious. How fast is the stock Odyssey?
they're pretty quick.
Out the back seats and nail it.
Right? Yeah, especially when you gut them. They're not slow.
Yeah. Honda J-Series.
Right? It's great. Great little engine. They're still going. They have direct injection variants. They still have a timing belt.
You said they need to be adjusted every once in a while, right?
The valves still need to be adjusted on J Series too, yeah. Which is ridiculous. Like, they're still using McKitt, but whatever. It works. You know, that's the thing. It works. It doesn't cause any problems. Now, they have other problems with those engines, but that's a story for another day.
I still want to do a VQ versus J Series segment one day.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. I always go back and forth on those engines because being a Nissan fanboy, I love the VQ.
Yeah, and I love my Nissan motors.
Right.
But seeing these J's, what they're swapped into and what those cars can do.
Right. I did see a kit online. No, now we're in just a J Series tangent. There was a kit online. So I don't know if you've ever really seen the J Series engine, but the intake manifold has like a plate on top of it.
Okay.
And you take that plate off and all the bolts to bolt the upper intake to the lower intake underneath that.
Okay.
So there's a company out there, or I don't even know if it's a company, it's just a guy in his garage that makes that plate, but it's an adapter for an M90 supercharger off like the front wheel drive supercharged Grand Prix that you can just find those superchargers in the junkyard.
So you could take the OEM Pontiac supercharger.
Yep.
And bolt it straight to this Honda J Series V6.
Bolt it right to the top.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Right? I'm like, that's perfect. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Because it's like the same-ish displacement, you know? So the M90's perfect. Yeah, like you said, there's a ton of them. You can still find them in junkyards.
That is awesome.
Right? So
wow.
A rear-wheel drive, supercharged J-Series, which also that engine, the J-Series is already a tall engine.
Yeah.
With a supercharger, that engine probably like 4 feet tall.
You have to cut a hole in the hood.
Yeah.
And have it popping out like Fast and Furious.
Yeah. But how awesome would that be? A freaking supercharger out the hood on an import car.
That would be hilarious.
On an import engine at that.
Yeah. And on a rear wheel drive setup swapped into like a BRZ or, hey, that one in the S2000 too.
Yeah.
Now, we saw a Grid Life. It's a shame. I don't think that there's a whole lot of like turnkey stuff. You have to do some fabrication to make that swap work.
Yeah, and there was a J-Swap kit for the Miata for a while that might still exist.
Wow.
But it's kind of rare.
Okay.
Because everybody usually opts for the K-Series. The J's, like I said, it's just a large engine to put in a Miata.
Well, and there's not as much aftermarket support for the J as there is for the K. You can do whatever you want to a K-Series motor.
There's not even a lot of like ECU support, you know.
Yeah.
You're pretty much running standalone at that point.
Yeah, so. There's some Hondatas.
Okay.
That'll run for some J Series, but not all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing too. The J Series is like, that's been running longer than the K Series has.
Yeah, because you've got the Accords, the TLs,
yep.
The Odyssey.
Back, I think it was originally like a 3.2.
Okay. And it before, was the Pilot, the Ridgeline.
Yep. Yeah, all the Acuras, because I think it was like the 3.2 CL or something like that.
Yeah, because there was a 2.2 and a 3.2 CL.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it was an F22 or the J.
Man, yeah, I don't know much about my early Acuras, to be honest.
I was just surprised that there was one car where you could get an F or a J option, but I guess that makes sense because that was also available in the Accord.
Yeah. You know what? Speaking of early Acuras, do you know that Acura made a front-wheel drive inline five?
Really?
It was a longitudinally mounted inline five with an Audi style transmission,
and it was front wheel drive.
And it's front wheel drive.
What was it in?
That is a great question. The Legend, maybe?
The Acura Legend.
I think maybe it was that. Hold on, audience, I'm gonna look this up. So yeah, it was the G Series engine, and it was available in the Honda Vigor.
Did we ever get that one in the States?
We did. I've worked on one of these. It is legitimately, it looks like an Audi engine. It is an inline five.
Wow. Okay. That is interesting.
Come on, Honda boys. Why aren't you doing more with the G Series engine? Let's get some inline five freaking turbo noises going.
Yeah, like the Volvo C30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a weird, like, that's where I kind of give some credence to the idea of, like, Subaru copying Audi, because Japan back in the day did tend to copy a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the original Lexus GS sedan was designed to copy and honestly outcompete,
right,
the BMWs and the Mercedes, yeah, at the time.
Yeah, that was their goal, was to just, like, crush it with that.
Yeah, and I think they had an original ad where they would, like, put a glass of wine down on the hood.
While on the dyno?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that was actually a specially made dyno that was on an incline, so that way the hood was actually flat. Because the hood has a slight downward slope.
That is such a Japanese thing to do. Like, we want to shoot this ad. Well, how are we going to do that?
Like, you could have just, like, propped the hood up a little bit, but then it wouldn't look right. So we'll just build a special dyno.
Which means somewhere, and you know that dyno is probably still there.
Yeah, Toyota doesn't really throw anything out.
Which means somewhere in the city that Toyota owns for R&D, there's a dyno with a slant on it.
We need to, somebody find that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, like, the early, I feel like when Toyota came up with Lexus, they were just like, no, we are going to come out and be a game changer.
Yeah.
But, like, with Acura and Infiniti, especially Infiniti.
Yeah.
Acura was like, no, we'll give you, like, our higher end cars from Japan, you know. Infiniti was like, I don't know, slap an Infiniti badge on a Nissan Leopard. It's fine.
What's that, a Skyline? Nope, it's a G35.
Yeah. Like, although, I mean, the early days were even worse. Like the J30.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like that car, but it is not a luxury car. Like, you know, even the early M45s, which I love.
Yeah.
They weren't anything compared to like a LS400.
But those VH45 motors are no joke.
So I've heard that those have some piston problems.
Do they?
I've heard.
I know some people like to swap them into the S chassis.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I haven't seen anybody go really big with one. Like, try to make big numbers with it.
Well, we saw that one at, like, the car show at Nissan here.
Yeah, he had a Z32 trans. He said he put a junkyard Q45 motor in it, but it blew up. Blew up twice. So he's like, I'm not messing around with that anymore. He got a low mileage JDM motor.
Yeah.
But he was still running just a Q45 ECU.
Yeah, which was, I don't know, he was running the SR ECU. Or... Well,
he said it was the factory ECU for the VH45 motor.
Oh, okay, okay. I guess I got confused because I thought he said he was running the factory 240 ECU. And I was like, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
Because you have double the injectors and double those sparks.
Yeah, it's like, why is this working?
Right? It shouldn't, but... Also, knowing Nissan, I was going to be like, yeah, they probably just made the same ECU with 8 injector drivers and just turned 4 of them off. You know,
that's why it's fun to mod Nissan,
right? Because they're just like, I don't know, let's make one part and put it in everything.
No, it'll work with everything.
Yeah. Another brand that kind of did that, and also the only Japanese brand that didn't get in on the luxury market, because, you know, Acura has Honda, Infiniti, Nissan,
Toyota Lexus, Mitsubishi didn't get in on it.
Oh, Mitsubishi didn't. You got me there. Mazda.
That's true, but they kind of had their own shtick, you know?
They did try to get in on the luxury game.
Really?
Yeah, so the Mazda... Oh, shit, what was that? The Millennia. Okay. Mazda Millennia S.
Oh, I remember that car.
Was actually supposed to be a Finny. E-F-F-I... Or E-F-F-N-I?
Effini.
Effini? Okay, I don't even know how to pronounce it. That was going to be their luxury brand, and that was going to be their car. And then that all folded, and it became a Mazda.
That sounds like it's for the best. That no American would be able to pronounce that
name. Right? Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, Mazda has all sorts of names like that, like the Enos Roadster, and like.
That's true, which is why we just got it with a different name. Yeah, in the US.
They're like, it's a Miata.
Yeah, that's it. You can say Miata, right? Say Miata,
right?
And for those who can't, it's an MX-5. I know you can say that.
Remember when they briefly were like, "No, it's an MX-5. It's not a Miata," and everybody kept calling it Miata. They're like, fine, it's a Miata again.
But I think in certain parts of the world, they called it the MX-5.
In Europe, they did. Yeah,
like, it never was a Miata.
Yeah, in Japan, it was the Roadster. In Europe, it was the MX-5. In America, it was the Miata. And they tried with NC to be like, no, it's an MX-5 everywhere.
That makes sense.
There's certain near Miatas that you will not find a Miata badge anywhere on it.
Next time I see an NC, I need to look at that.
Yeah.
Well, but that makes sense because that was right around the time that they were coming out with like the CX-5, the CX-7.
Yep.
Their whole brand was the letter hyphen number.
Yeah. They were really trying to solidify that.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, no, it's a Miata.
Yeah, this is a Miata.
But then, of course, you know, they moved on to the ND and still called it a Miata. And everybody loves the ND, especially Japan. And this is what I love about Mazda, honestly. Like, yeah, they failed at the luxury game, but they just like, fine, we're going to focus on sporty cars and we're going to make them light.
And they've done such an awesome job.
They have.
I mean, the current Miata ND. Being in, how long has Miata been in production?
Since 1989.
Yeah. So what is that? 30 years now?
Something like that.
Yeah.
My can't math tonight.
Constant production.
Yeah.
That's so impressive. Like, for any sports car.
Yeah.
And it's so cool that the Miata is a track darling for all the grassroots motorsports.
Right.
And it's because there's so many of them.
There's so many of them. And it's the, I don't know, it's the lightest, like, pure sports car you can make.
Yeah.
Or get, I should say. And in Japan, now, unfortunately, we're not going to get this here, they're making an even lighter, more track-focused version called the 990S Roadster, so-called because it weighs 990 kilos, which is about, what did it say, 2180.
See, that's so light, especially by modern standards.
That is incredibly light.
Yeah, because I think the regular model is, what, like 22 and change?
Yeah.
Which is still lighter than
I think it's 23-something, because I was looking it up the other day.
Because I know the RF's a little heavier.
Yeah.
And is the RF the 23 or is that?
Maybe that's the thing that I saw.
But the fact that the RF is 2300, my BRZ weighs 2800 pounds.
Right. My Ford Fiesta, all the car reviewers just praise it for being so light and it comes in at 27.
Yeah.
This is 2180.
That is so light for a production
car.
That
is, according to this article on Japanese Nostalgia Car, that is close to the original Miata. The original one.
Yeah, the actual 89 or 90 Miata.
Right, and this makes way more horsepower. It is way stiffer. I can actually fit in this car. You know, that's amazing that they can even make that light.
And the ND is just great looking, too.
Right.
I'm just so happy that Mazda continues to develop this. You know,
yeah.
When they did the 30th anniversary edition, I was like, please, God, give me another turbo. Just like, you know, that two-year production run we had with the NB. But, you know, they gave it an orange paint job and Brembo brakes up front.
I mean, you know me. I love orange.
Yeah.
I love Miatas. It was very tempting to go buy one of those.
It's a good-looking car. But I genuinely love these cars. The ND is... It does what no company should be able to do, given modern safety regulations.
Right.
You know, it's... Nobody's ever been... Like, I don't think we're ever going to see a car this light come out. Again.
No, and unfortunately, we're never going to see a car this light in America because, according to Mazda, this is so in Japan, they have like a 1.6 liter model, I believe it is.
Okay.
That has a smaller engine in it.
And we have the 2 liter in the States.
2 liter. And according to them, they could make a lighter version. They might actually do that, but they say that the 2 liter requires extra bracing and bigger axles and just things that would add weight just by having that and having that extra power.
Yeah,
because, you know, as hot rodders, we're like, we'll stress these like little axles, it's fine, we'll try whatever we have to do to shave some weight. But as a manufacturer, we're like, no, those axles need to be beefier hold that 30 more horsepower.
We have to warranty this.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
We don't want to have to fix these every time they break. It's interesting. Yeah. So there's no GPS. There's no, Mazda Connect. I'm guessing that's their infotainment system.
Yeah.
It
uses Ray's forged wheels,
which is nice.
Right.
That's really awesome. And Brembo's from the factory.
Yeah. Yeah. Bigger Brembo brakes.
Yeah.
So this thing has got to be right. Yeah. It's going to be slow, but it's kind of like we were talking about that, Lotus 7K car the other day.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't matter if it's not very, very powerful. Just make it super light. And there you go, Colin Chapman approach.
It is interesting that the Japanese version has the 1.5 and that the 2 liter was specific for the American market.
Yeah.
Because they knew who they were selling to.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense because in Japan, it's all, you know, smaller city roads or even the B roads or, you know, smaller, and the whole country's smaller in general. Yeah. You know, you have, but out here in America, you have the highway to Kansas.
Yeah, it's just big, wide open, and flat.
Where you're like, I could use a little more power right now. I need to get through Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, I mean, it's cool that they've got these different engine options for the different markets. I think it's neat that they did that, you know, that they gave us the 2-liter, you know, even if it does mean that ours is a bit heavier. It just fits the market well.
Yeah.
Because Americans love to complain about the old Mazda 1.6 and the first gen Miata.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun.
It is. The thing, like, I have a text saved, and I know, Nate, I know you listen to this podcast. I got this thing screenshotted. This guy I used to work with at the junkyard back in Michigan, he used to make fun of me because I had a Miata, and he'd riff me all the time. I moved out here, and he sent me a thing about 2 years later. He's like, bro, we got one of these, we got a Miata in the junkyard, and I just ripped it around in the dirt lot. He's like, I understand now. I'm sorry for making fun of you.
Oh, that's hilarious. He never drove your car.
No.
That's so funny.
At the time, I was young, and I was like, nobody's driving my car. It's my car. Now, I don't give a shit as much. But
I feel you.
Yeah. But it's just like, I just felt so vindicated. I was like, yes, yes, another conversion. Like, yes, Miatas are good. On paper, it doesn't make sense.
No.
I mean, it's the same thing with the BRZ and FRS.
Yeah.
On paper, you're like, I'll buy a V6 Mustang.
Right. It makes more power.
Yeah.
You know, it may cost a little bit more, but the 0-60 numbers are better.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but then you drive it and you're like, oh, I get it now.
I love my old NA Miata.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking forward to seeing it when I fly back to Tennessee.
I'm looking forward to doing something with that.
Yeah. I think, so my latest idea has just been to make it an amateur rally Miata.
Rally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Put the Paco Motorsports lift kit on it.
Yep.
With the Fox Racing coilovers you can get from Flying Miata.
Yeah.
And put some light bars on it and some mud tires and just have fun.
Yeah, let's do it. The local Colorado Rallycross Association, like, they need people out there racing.
Okay.
Like, not many people are going out, which is amazing because
Yeah.
I think they hold great events.
Well, and there's a million broken Subarus in this state.
Right? You would think with all the Subarus here, rally would be huge. But yeah, no, it's all a bunch of rally bros that buy Subarus and then want to street drive them.
Oh, I got you.
You know, but if you want to actually be a fucking cool kid, take your Subaru, look up the Colorado Rallycross SCCA group. I think they're doing a race next weekend. So if you're listening to this podcast, the day it comes out or the week that it's out, they're doing an event next weekend. Sign your ass up, because it's just like the drag strip thing.
Yeah.
If you want racing like that to keep around, do it.
You have to participate.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, this is all volunteer run. Like, it's not some big, you know, WRC like we were talking about earlier.
And the volunteers at some of the, like, the people at Track Attack are just so helpful.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. It's amazing the stress that they have to go through, like, corralling a bunch of stupid car guys, and they're still really helpful.
Yeah. They're still really helpful. They're exhausted by the end of the day.
Right?
They've been out there for 12 hours.
In the sun.
On their weekend.
Right.
So that you can race. They're not even driving.
Yeah. So it's like, just show your support for your local tracks and your local organizations, you know.
Yeah.
I have this idea, and, you know, episodes ago we were talking about, like, ways to go and race for cheap, you know, and I'd always try to highlight a thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of got lost with what I had said and what I didn't, because I didn't keep track of things.
Yeah.
Because I should keep track of things.
I forget things so often.
It's so bad. But I, at some point, this is a project I want to work on, is make the definitive guide to budget racing.
Oh, that would be cool. Like, for every discipline?
Yeah, pretty much.
That would be really neat.
So I'm going to get started on that. I hope to get started on that this weekend and then add that to the website. And it's going to, you know, I'm not going to have everything on there right away. But if there's something, like, I want us as a community to keep growing this database.
Yeah.
And I want to list things by region. If they're region based, you know, keep it searchable. I'm probably going to need some help with some HTML code with this, because I'm not that great with this shit. But, because, and then when people are like, oh, well, you know, I don't have the car for this or something, just be like, or like, I want to go racing, but I only have this much money. It's like, boom, here's the guide.
Yeah.
How much money do you have? Where do you live? Here's the people you want to talk to.
See, that's cool. And that gets more people out and more people involved.
Right.
Because it can be intimidating. You don't know where to go. And I mean, especially if you say you come across an autocross event at your local mall on a Sunday.
Right.
And you walk up to the table. You're like, how do I do this?
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, you have to go home and join our club and pay a $60 yearly membership fee and look up the schedule. And hey, you might be able to ride along with somebody today.
Right. That is one thing I hate about SCCA. It's like, oh, there's a race like tomorrow. Call, like, email. I'm like, can I sign up? Like, no, you need to sign up 2 weeks ago. What are you, an idiot?
Yeah.
I was like, guys, don't put, like, the more barriers we put in the way, the more people you're just going to keep away from this.
I've literally rolled out of bed, bought my ticket for Track Attack, and driven to Colorado Springs.
Right? And really, you didn't have to do that. You can buy a ticket at the gate.
Yeah.
They just like it if you pre-buy it.
Yeah. Oh, it's easier on you.
Right, exactly. I
just pull up the QR code on my phone and drive right through.
Right. But yeah, no, to get back to your, you said earlier about it being, like, intimidating. Like,
yeah.
The first 2 years I went to Track Attack, I'd get super anxious going down there. Like, not even like my first time. This is like my 12th time, you know?
Yeah.
It's now to the point where I know enough people there that I'm just like, I show up and it's like, you know, it's like cheers, you know? Yeah.
like Matt!
Yeah.
It really is like that. You know everybody down there.
It's true. At least everybody in like the front wheel drive classes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've met a few people in the rear wheel drive classes when I've gone down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an, you know, I was nervous first few times I went down.
Yeah.
You know, now I go down, I'm like, all right, let's have some fun.
Right.
You know, but there's a million people there and they all seem to know what to do and you don't, and they've got tire warmers and
right.
all this equipment. And
yeah. But I mean, our Track Attack stuff we do is pretty like low end grassroots stuff. But honestly, even the bigger races I've been to, like, everybody's super helpful.
See, that's awesome.
You know, I mean, shit, even when we're at Pikes Peak, those are pro teams.
Yeah.
And they love talking to people. I've seen teams work, helping out other teams to get them racing and stuff. Yeah. You know, that's, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what I love about motorsports.
It really is the camaraderie, you know, like people are all there for the same goal and they recognize what you're doing is insanely difficult and they want to help you do it.
Right. You know, and we all know this is kind of a dying, you know, hobby.
Yeah.
So we all got to work. We all got to work together to keep it going.
Yeah. It's got to last at least as long as I'm alive.
Exactly. I mean, as long as I'm alive, I'll be racing something.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's a dirt track in my backyard.
Yeah.
we'll go back to some early NASCAR shit.
What's
I don't
that
care.
Crazy old man doing back there?
He's just driving in circles in his antique car. It's Fiesta.
It's so loud.
Oh, man. Fuck, speaking of loud, the next engine we're going to talk about is probably going to be a screamer at some point, but we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about another Chevy engine. Actually, last podcast, we came back from a break talking about a Chevy engine. We're going to do the same again.
All right. You know what? There's enough Chevy engines to where we could come back from every break.
But this one is about the complete opposite of the last one we talked about, too.
It really is. It really is. It's Chevy stepping into the future.
Yeah, anyway. All right. Heretics, we'll be right back. Welcome back, Heretics. Man, before the break, my whole mouth was just getting dry. I don't know if you could hear that, if the audience could hear that or not, but man, I was just like, just parched.
I couldn't tell, but I know it gets fatiguing sometimes, you know, like my throat will dry out by the end of the podcast usually.
Right? This is hard work.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking is hard work.
We're working hard here, guys. We're working hard for you, our listener.
Right? I was kind of thinking, while we're on break, we were talking before the show about how, like, when we moved to Colorado, my skin had to acclimate to the dry weather.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if my, like, mouth and vocal cords have to acclimate to talking a lot. Because outside of this, I don't really talk all that much, I feel like.
That's true. You are a pretty stoic individual.
Yeah. Just, I back to my thoughts, you know? Yeah. And then I come here and I talk a lot and my body's like, what is this? We haven't prepared for this. We're not used to this.
Well, you know me, I talk a lot no matter where I am.
This is true. You're a seasoned veteran. So we promised another Chevy engine before the break. And unless you've been living under a rock, I think you know which one we're talking about. The new LT6 that's going to power the 2023 Corvette Z06. It's a dual overhead cam, flat plane crank, dry sump Chevy V8.
Which this is crazy. I mean, the C8 did reinvent the Corvette by making it mid-engined.
Yeah.
But it still had a pushrod V8 at its heart.
Right. It still had that, like, DNA in it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something else entirely.
Yeah.
This is brand new, like you were saying, dual overhead cam. That's easily the biggest change. I mean, we're seeing this thing has four cams instead of one.
Right? That's four times the camshafts.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's what most modern supercars, muscle cars, most modern V8s, mm-hmm. most engines now are overhead cam. So it you know, it kind of brings it into the modern era, but that was the last holdout. That was the last thing. The Corvette is now entirely a different vehicle.
Yeah, I agree. Like, they have completely shunned the, you know, old guy wearing New Balance shoes. You know, this is now the young guy wearing Vans.
There we go. That's the market they're going for.
It really is. Yeah. You know, it's the younger guy that has money now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the picture of this engine, and one, first off, I just have to point out, water-cooled alternator, so that's interesting, which kind of makes sense. When you're in a really hot mid-engine bay, you actually could overheat that alternator.
That's interesting. But
the thing I really want to point out is, even though this engine is just like, you know, has all the newest technology, one thing that stands out to me is the same Chevy belt tensioner that they've been using since like 1995.
Oh, well, that's hilarious.
That is the exact same belt tensioner.
So they did keep one thing.
They kept some stuff. Yeah. But also on the front of those camshafts, look, it's going to be variable valve timing too. Of course it is, like every V8 is, but those are the same cam phasers you can find in like Mercedes, Volkswagen, Nissan.
So don't buy aftermarket.
Yeah, exactly. Although I don't know how good GM's going to do on that either. So,
so needless to say, this engine's probably going to have some issues in its first generation or two.
Oh, I guarantee it.
But now the Corvette's a supercar, so no one is expecting it to be reliable.
True, but that's kind of sad too, because that was the one thing about the Corvette, is that it was a car that could beat Ferraris in, you know, a lot higher end vehicles. But you can go down to the parts store and buy parts for it if you ever broke. But it really didn't that much, because it's just a simple Chevy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the stuff bolted to the block would break.
Yeah. You know? Right. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, it's a Chevy. They have Chevy problems. But yeah, this is going to introduce all sorts of new headaches, I believe.
Which I believe they did try to do a dual overhead cam Corvette in the past.
The ZR1, the 80s. The C4 ZR1, that was dual cam.
And I believe that had a lot of spectacular failures.
I don't know about failures. It was like the fastest car at all when it came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that thing was a monster when it came out, especially compared to like the base model C4, which was just a dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
It had like 190 horsepower.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of the C4.
No, but it, like everything, it's growing on me, but only because of what people are starting to do to them right now with like aftermarket body kits and stuff.
Okay.
They're going kind of wild with them, and I love it.
Which is cool, because the aesthetic was a huge downside on that. It's the worst looking Corvette they ever made.
Yeah. See, when I was a kid, I really liked them. I think it was Gran Turismo 2. I really liked the Grand Sport, the blue with the red Grand Sport stripes.
Yeah.
I really liked that car. But yeah, then they kind of, I don't know, the styling just got too plain in a way.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, is it's not ugly.
No.
It's just when you compare it to a C3 and a C5,
yeah,
it's like, oh, these are clearly better looking.
Right. But some of the modern body kits people are coming out for them, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. This almost has like a JDM vibe going to it.
That's kind of cool. Have you seen people are doing this like weird RX-7 Corvette carryover? Yeah,
C5 stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people are making RX-7s look like Corvettes, and some people are making Corvettes look like RX-7s.
Yeah. There was a from the video I did of Slushfest, or no? Was it Slushfest? I don't remember. Well, the video I did on YouTube there.
Yeah.
Like the car right at the beginning, it's a C5 Corvette with an RX-7 style bumper.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, that looks good.
They have like really similar dimensions and body lines.
They really do, yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name? He always does the renderings. KS, Kelly Salim or something like that. What the hell is his name?
He actually does the artistic renderings for the
cars? Yeah. Kaizil Salim?
Kaizil Salim.
I'm butchering that for sure. But he did a render of a C5 done up in Aria. Wow.
Aria-mania?
Yeah, thank you. That is two really hard names for me to pronounce. But oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah, that does look really, really good.
I mean, it looks just like an RX-7, but...
Oh, yeah, but RX-7s are gorgeous.
Right, so good job.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is an RX-7 that I will fit in.
Oh, so you don't fit in an FD?
I do not fit in an FD.
Interesting. I didn't realize that the roofline was so low on that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe with some aftermarket seats.
I did get out limboed by an FD.
You did, at yeah. K-Series parts. Yeah. So. Yeah, they have a really short roofline. So, like, if I can just make a C5 look like a JDM drift car, then, you know, that solves some problems.
That'd be pretty cool.
And it's already LS swapped.
Yeah, you don't have to LS swap a Corvette. They did it for you.
Right? Anyways, we should get back to what we were talking about, which was not LSs, LTs, but not also not old LTs, yeah, not new the, LTs.
they couldn't call it an LR.
Right.
They couldn't give it a different, like, they had to recycle LT, even though in the 90s that was the performance motor.
I know. Not even, they didn't even just recycle LT, like, they recycled LT1. Like, the base model Corvette engine is an LT1.
Okay.
Which was the same engine in the Corvette from the 80s.
Yeah.
It was an LT1.
And it was a cast iron block,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That was a Chevy 350. Like, yeah. That was still like a Gen 2 engine? I don't even.
But it was fuel injected.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it was a Chevy 350. You can bolt any Chevy 350 head to that engine.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, yeah, is cool. But that was probably the longest running engine of all time. This one, though, I don't know if, like, that's the question. Is this the new baseline? Like, is this what... Are they going to develop this engine in the Z06 and then have a detuned version for the base going in the future?
I'm guessing it depends on how badly this performs.
Like, good point.
Like, it's obviously going to come out of the gate with some strong, you know, power numbers, lap numbers, 0 to 60. It's all going to look good. But how reliable is it, especially with the LS as a standard?
Right.
And this article specifically talks about swap potential.
Well, we're on Hot Rod's website. Well, Motor Trend, but Hot Rod. Yeah.
But that's interesting because one of the things that makes the LS so swappable is that it's a push rod compact package.
Right.
You can fit it in just about anything.
Yeah.
This engine is substantially taller and wider.
It is, and it also has a proprietary intake manifold and exhaust manifolds and dry sump system. There's a lot of stuff that's going to make this swapping this, A, the cost is going to be exorbitant.
Yeah.
B, it's going to be way more difficult. There's going to be somebody at SEMA that does
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that course. Being said, it's a Chevy Corvette engine. Someone will swap it yeah. into something.
Right, like, it's going to happen, but it's not going to be, like, you know, you're never going to see this proliferated just because
yeah.
there's not that many out there. I would like to see Chevy, like, I would like to see a truck version of this in the future.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like that's what I'm excited for. Not this one.
Corvette,
but,
Camaro.
Yeah.
And then into the trucks.
But is this the last hurrah for V8s too? Chevy's making a hybrid Corvette.
That's true. That's true. This current generation of sports cars could be the last all internal combustion generation.
Yeah. I mean, Ford's moving away from V8s.
Yeah. The Mustang has an electric version now, even though it's an SUV.
Yeah, but even in the trucks, Ford's moving away from V8s.
Yeah, that's true.
So is GM ever going to develop a dual overhead cam V8 for their trucks, or are they just going to go to turbo V6s?
So maybe this is just, hey, we gave the engineers the keys to the factory.
Right.
Like, what can you do?
And it really seems like they did. I mean, like I said, dry sump, flat plane crank V8. I do like how this article is going about the active intake manifold system. Like in this article, the new 11-liter active split intake manifold is another engineering wonder. Literally, we've been doing active intake manifolds since the 80s. All right, Chevy, glad you caught up. It's not an engineering marvel.
It's impressive. It's on a Corvette.
Right? Good point. Yeah. Actually, no, it's not, because I'm pretty sure GM's doing that on their V8s already. Like, it's literally nothing new.
How cool would it be, though, to do the same thing for so long that, like, it's like, hey, I started wearing pants with buttons today. Like, oh my God, it's an engineering marvel.
It's the kid that eats paste in class every day, and then one day he doesn't eat paste, and they're like, oh my God, he's a miracle.
Yeah.
He didn't eat paste.
And no, everybody's ignoring the 29 other kids in the class who never ate paste.
Right. That are well on into their, you know, algebra now.
Yeah.
No, I give Chevy a lot of shit, but I mean, to be fair, everybody LS swaps things because it's such a good engine. So we talk shit, but they perfected it. It's the right. Porsche approach.
Yeah, just incremental improvements, And if you fuck up, you walk it back.
Right? Yeah. Which, yeah, we'll go back and we might want to talk about that 718 GT4 RS in a second here. But, yeah, we'll see. Oh, yeah. All these engines are hand-built, too.
Wow.
Yeah. They come with a nameplate. You know, they finally caught up to Nissan.
By Michael Simcoe, yeah. do you get the Japanese engineer's name on your GTR engine?
I think you did.
That's pretty neat.
I'm pretty sure you did. I don't know if they still do that, but...
How cool would that... Like, this is made by Hiroshi. Like,
right?
Awesome.
Right. It was, like, the GTR engines, that was the gimmick at the time, is they were made by one person or assembled by one person. They put their names played on it. So, once again, good job catching up to the Japanese.
How cool would it be to be such a good engine builder that your company was making engine nameplates for you like that?
Right. I mean, to be fair, like, I'm sure these people are well-trained and everything. They're the high end, but it's still a manufacturing, like, a process, you know. They're not... hand assembling a race engine like a, you know, small time builder would do, doing machining and stuff like that. You know, they're assembling, yes, but it's a gimmick, you know. At the end of the day, a machine could probably put it together more efficiently, so.
But these are hand put together.
Yes.
In Kentucky.
I mean, and to be fair, if you're paying that much money for a car, pretty much paying that much money for an engine, because I'm sure the chassis will be different, but it's still a Corvette.
Yeah.
You know, you want that prestige, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to spend $85,000 on the car, which that's the big thing with the C8, is they're trying to attract people who would otherwise buy something Italian.
Right.
Or something very expensive in German.
Yes.
And that's, you know, the Corvette's always been an alternative to those, but now it's a direct competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, gimmicks like that are part of how you do something like that.
And I was going to say, like, the big appeal of this is, like, that it's, of course, you know, going to be world-beating performance for way less than any of those Italian brands.
Right, right.
But I just got thinking, how is this going to stack up against that NSX, that last Type S NSX they made?
With the hybrid drivetrain.
Yeah, because that thing was actually really fast.
Yeah. Which, when you've got electric motors, you know, you do have an advantage.
Right.
Which that might be, you know, what finally pushes Chevy. You know, obviously, they're still looking. They're already building the hybrid Corvette.
Yeah, they've already been caught testing.
Yeah. So it's, but we know that electric motors, like you were saying, especially in certain race applications, having an electric assist is more helpful. You are going to be quicker.
Right.
You know, especially, like I said, like you were saying, in sprint races, and getting you off the line, having all that zero RPM torque.
So I'm just looking at the stats here. Sorry, I didn't mean to ignore you there. Because it makes a lot of horsepower for a, you know, naturally aspirated V8, but 670 horsepower at 8,400 RPMs seems like kind of low for some reason. Have I just become jaded when it comes to, like, supercar performance?
Well, I think it's with performance, yeah, with performance cars. Well, especially with a big muscle car,
right?
Like this. I mean, you're used to seeing these monstrous numbers,
right? I guess, though,
like I'm pretty sure
that's not that far off from, like, a Hellcat.
Wasn't the C6 ZR1? Didn't that make more power than this?
I don't know. Might not have, because I thought the whole thing with the Hellcat when it came out that it was, like, the most powerful.
And that's what, at 700?
707.
Okay. And the Demon makes, what, 800?
Something like that.
Okay.
I do love how Chrysler was like, oh, they're catching up. Boost. Just crank it up. And they made no other changes.
Give it another name.
Right.
Only 460 foot-pounds of torque.
Yeah. This is going to be, it's almost like a rotary.
Yeah, a high revving V8.
Yeah, yeah,
84 RPM. 5.5, so that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. It's like such a departure. It's a smaller displacement.
I mean,
that's still pretty big by some standards, but high revving. The one thing I did see in here too, it takes, where did it go? 10 quarts of 5W50.
Wow, that's thick oil.
Right. Well. For today's standards, it certainly is, when Toyota is now using 0W16.
Wow, so 0W20 is too thick.
Yeah. They're like, man, we could eke out another 0.01 miles per gallon across our board.
Which I swear, when I do my 0W20 oil changes in the BRZ, it's like water coming out of there. I can barely catch it in my pan. It splashes everywhere.
Well, especially when it gets warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, the dry sump system frees up 14 horsepower.
Huh. That's kind of neat.
I mean, that's kind of... That's what I always love about dry sump stuff. It's like, if you're doing high-end shit, like you're trying to make as much power as possible, then of course, yeah, do that. And also, there's other benefits for oiling. Like, you don't have to worry about G-forces sloshing your oil away from the pickups or anything like that. But yeah, like the amount of horsepower it actually saves isn't all that much.
But this engine's the bonkers engine. This engine, they're going all exactly. out.
You got to do it all. Like, if you're going to compete with Ferrari, with Lamborghini, with Audi... With, well, you're not really competing with any of the bigger names, but, you know, that's what you got to do. That's what your customers expect. And props to Chevy for doing that. Man, like, look at how short these pistons are. How much they had to, like, the... Of course, you'll be able to find this article linked in the show notes, so you can see all these pictures we're talking about on an audio-only format. But... These pistons are so short. Like, there's barely a skirt on these things.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's going to aid in the higher RPM power.
Yep. They're just trying to get as much RPM out of this thing as possible. Also, with modern CAD technology and stuff, we've kind of figured out you don't need giant skirts on pistons.
Really?
You just need them in certain spots.
That's fine. And now we have the technology to put them exactly where they're needed.
Right. So you know, the computer will just, like, figure out how much stuff you can take away and still be good.
See, that's interesting. I've heard that 3D printing is kind of the next phase in high-end engine development.
Yeah, it's one of those things, just like I was talking with this, like, if this is going to be the last hurrah, though, like, that technology is catching up, but the application is moving away.
Yeah, it's just sad to see. But maybe we'll see this in some sort of bonkers Camaro.
Yeah, maybe.
Like down the line, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see, like I said, if they continue the development of this dual cam engine. I'd love to see Chevy get into the 21st century and make another game-changing engine.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the dual cam Chevy V8 becomes the next big swap.
Maybe.
Not this one in particular, but just
the one that proliferates down.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see that. That would be really cool. If nothing else, just to have more engines to swap.
Yeah, exactly.
There's only so many LSs in the world.
Right? And everybody else is making less V8s. So,
yeah.
Chevy, you got to hold on, man. Yeah. You got to keep it going.
At least offer it as a crate motor.
I ain't putting a Chrysler engine in my car. Couldn't pay me to do that.
Hellcat swaps for the Fiesta?
No. I do not like Chrysler engines. I don't like Chryslers in general at this point in my life. Having worked on enough of them, I'm like, these are bad. Of course, that's Chrysler's Achilles heel, is they do crazy cool shit, but they never have the funding to quite do it properly.
They don't think it through.
That too.
Well, that's what I thought was hilarious about the Challenger in general. It's like, all right, we made this awesome looking car that's really fast in a straight line with a big motor. Well, what are our complaints? It can't corner or stop. How are we going to fix that? Let's put a bigger motor.
Right. I mean, you got to give them credit. They're like, no, we made a muscle car.
Right.
And we're tripling down on that.
Yeah, not doubling, tripling down. You're right. Because, yeah. You know, Ford and Chevy made a muscle car. They can turn a corner.
Right.
And they're like, no, this is for cruising and drag racing and nothing else.
Right. Yeah, no, the Chevy, the Camaro and the Mustang are both, like, great handling cars now.
They really are.
And the Challenger, well... Like, there's a Challenger I see almost every morning when I'm going to work, and the guy drives like an asshole, because of course he does. He drives a Challenger. If you own a Challenger, I'm not saying you necessarily drive like an asshole, but there's a higher percentage that you do. I saw him one day, like, the traffic was kind of bad, and he just, like, zoomed by on the shoulder.
On the shoulder?
On the shoulder.
25?
No, this was on Hamden.
Oh, on Hamden. So
yeah.
He doesn't even care if he wrecks his own car.
Right. Well, then like a week later, the quarter panel's all smashed up now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he hit that shoulder a little too hard.
Yeah, he hit something. And of course, he doesn't have the money to fix it. because he owns a Challenger.
Well, and the Challengers are massive.
Yeah, they are.
They're huge. Try to cram that into a tight space like that?
Oh, he's like, he tries to cruise through traffic like he's in my Fiesta.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You know, just buzzing through there. But yeah, it's just hilarious to me that it's now smashed up. And I guarantee he probably either didn't have insurance on it or took the insurance payout for something else. I don't have a high standard for the Challenger drivers, as you can tell.
I can't tell at all. No.
Also, I'm pretty sure it's a V6 Challenger.
Oh, okay. So just no love for this dude.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Just like, why? You bought that just for the status.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you drive it like an asshole. Yeah. Fuck that guy. Oh, I hope he wrecks the rest of the car. All right, moving on. We kind of bounced around there talking about that engine. But if you want to read a really thorough breakdown, we'll have that link to that Hot Rod article. Very, very thorough breakdown of everything in that engine. Yes. More than we could get into even in the entire hour. So, yeah, we're going to go back to rallying at this point, but we're going to go to vintage rallying. So I just wanted to bring this up because I thought it was really cool. There's a company in the UK that is going to be building a Ford Sierra RS500 continuation models. This is like the Ford Sierra.
Yeah, which this is awesome. The Sierra Cosworth. This was a huge car in the UK. It was basically insured out of existence.
Right.
Because it was the most stolen car in the UK. I think it was used for the most robberies and crimes because it was such a good getaway vehicle.
Yeah.
And it basically became impossible to own one of these things. But it's a legend now. And I think what the coolest thing is, all these companies, like a lot of companies, are seeing some of their used models just skyrocket in price.
Yeah.
And they're like, I want to get in on that.
Right. Well, I don't think this is Ford. This is a separate company, I believe. But it has to be
certified. Like, they got certified. The original body shells, right?
Yeah. So I'm sure they worked with Ford for this, for sure. But part of the appeal of the original Sierra was how cheap it was for how much performance you got. It was like the Fiesta ST of its time, kind of. Yeah. But this one, on the other hand, not going to be so cheap.
Yeah.
$250,000 for these things. I mean, I guess I guarantee there's some rich people in England. I almost guarantee Jeremy Clarkson might buy one of these.
I'm betting one of the Top Gear guys is going to buy one of these.
Yeah. I mean, because Clarkson loves fast Fords.
He does.
You know, the other guys, I think, could take it or leave it. But
honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Hammond bought one of these. But James May would make relentless fun of them for buying it.
Yeah, he would, for spending that much money.
Yeah.
I don't know if Hammond would. Hammond seems to be more into, like, the weird shit. He's buying the Morgans and shit like that, you know?
But he loves his old Fords. He does have a Shelby GT350 from back in the day.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was the American.
Yeah.
So this thing is going to make 575 horsepower also, which is, I would argue, maybe too much for a Cosworth or but Sierra.
Hey, if you're spending $250,000 for it, you should get a little extra.
Right, you need a little extra to go along with it. So, if any of you listeners hit the lottery and you're like, man, I really liked the Ford Sierra Cosworth, you know, but we never really got them in America. I'd really like one just brand new. Well, there you go. You can go buy one. Actually, we did get this chassis, kind of. Merkur XR4 Ti.
Really? Okay.
But we got a single overhead cam, turbocharged Mustang SVO engine, and a different suspension, which was shittier.
Now, I think this was the one you were saying had the transmission that was like glass. They kept swapping out of it, right?
Yes.
And so this one has a Getrag transmission.
Yeah, of course. When they're putting down 575 horsepower, they are going to up that transmission. But yeah, that was the Ford Sigma transmission, I want to say. I'm not too familiar with it. All I know is that bolt pattern is the same as my Fiesta ST engine.
Yeah, which is why we were talking about putting that into an RX-8.
Yes, some rear-wheel drive options.
Yeah.
Which opens a lot of doors.
It really does. I mean, just there's so many chassis you could swap that into.
God, well, I should get a Merkur XR4 Ti and swap that engine into that.
That would be
with
cool.
An RX-8 transmission.
Build your own USDM Cosworth.
Yeah. God, that would be sick.
Yeah, it would.
And that'd be the perfect engine for it. I mean, I know some people are going to say the Focus engines would be better because it's bigger, but I love that Fiesta engine.
Yeah.
It's so good. And it keeps the spirit of like a 1600cc
yeah.
engine, you know.
You could get some of the UK body panels and the spoiler. And
yeah, this one, of course, has the double stack spoiler because that's, you know, you got to have that.
Yeah. It's iconic.
Yeah.
It's just really cool. Like I said, Nissan has started building RBs again.
Yeah.
And I recently rewatched that episode of Grand Tour where Aston Martin is making a DB4.
Right.
For $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And then there's a Jaguar you can get for £1 million too. But it's cool because, you know, a lot of these cars that are skyrocketing in value, some of these manufacturers are looking at it. We may see some heritage version of the GTR.
Yeah.
Like it's an possible. R34.
I mean, they still make parts, you know, and I mean, speaking of that, we can move on to the next topic. You know, because those cars, of course, are just way more expensive.
Yeah.
But if you want parts, there's heritage parts coming out. We talked a while back about the Supra heritage parts.
Yes.
Now, finally, they got the hint, AE86 heritage parts.
Which is awesome because having formerly owned one of these, finding parts is a nightmare.
Yeah,
I'm sure. These control arms they're talking about specifically.
Yeah.
You can't find those.
And I'm assuming they make them because they break or rot or something.
Yeah, they can rust out.
Yeah. Now, I did notice on this article, so this is the Gazoo Racing Heritage Parts Program. We talked about it, like I said, with the Mark III and Mark IV Supra parts. And yeah, now they're doing AE86 chassis, you know, your Corolla, your Levens, Sprinter, Terrenos. In case somebody listening to this podcast hasn't seen Initial D, I'm pretty sure our crossover is 100% there.
It's a prerequisite, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, they're finally making parts, but they're not going to come cheap, unfortunately.
Yeah, those rear calipers are $866 a piece.
For a caliper.
Yeah, for a rear caliper, not even the big one.
Right. No, I think at that point I would just get a Wilwood caliper.
Yeah, at that point you could.
Right.
At that point for buying both of those, you're almost at just putting a Wilwood kit all around the car.
Yeah, so Toyota, maybe work on your pricing a little bit there. $144 for these control arms, even it's not terrible, but it's pretty dang steep.
Yeah, it's high.
You know.
Although I imagine there are fewer alternatives for the arms.
True.
If you want to get a factory caliper, I guess there's really no other way to go.
Somebody has to make aftermarket arms for that thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is for the person who wants to restore, not modify.
Right.
You
which the prices on these things, just like everything else, you know, these Corollas used to be able to pick them up for, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 for a good one.
And then Initial D happened.
And now if you go to these car shows, have you seen what some of these people are paying for right-hand drive versions? Mm-hmm. You know, north of 10.
Like yeah.
Getting into 15.
Yeah. And it's just like, bro, you're paying that much money for a very slow car.
Yeah. They're not fast. No. They are absurdly fun.
I'm sure. I mean, I was just talking earlier about a Miata and how it's like, no, you have to drive one. And then I'm making the same argument about, or the opposite argument about this. But
a Miata doesn't cost $15,000 for an 89.
Not yet.
You're right. Not yet. they are appreciating, but
they're getting there.
But that's the thing is these things are fun because they're cheap and you can drive the absolute shit out of them. And experience all of these crazy car control scenarios at low speeds.
Yeah.
Short wheelbase with a solid axle is just a recipe for drifting fun.
Yeah. I just worry that there are people that grew up with these cars that are going to restore them and stuff like that. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I worry that the kids, and they are younger guys a lot of times, buying these cars for $12,000 are going to drive it and be severely disappointed because they don't know what and why this car is popular.
I think the 4AG made like 120 horsepower.
The 4AG is a terrible performance engine. I love that engine.
It's fun.
It is.
You can wind it out.
But much like the Miata 1.6, it is a terrible performance engine.
Yeah, you don't get any torque figures at all.
Right.
Like, it will thank you for beating the tar out of it.
Right.
which is, that's something that I can never fault a motor for that. And
any
motor that does that has a special place in my heart. You know, that's why I love rotaries so much.
Right, yeah. But, yeah, the 4AGE, like, even a fully built one, even the, like, you know, what was it? The racing engine that Takumi put in his
Formula Atlantic. 20-valve Silvertop 4AG.
Did he do that? I thought they did Formula Atlantic engine.
So it was from the racing series, but I believe it was supposed to be the 20-valve Silvertop.
Okay.
But it, you know, I'm not sure which are we talking the we're talking the anime, the manga, or the live action movie. There may be some differences.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but like the holy grail of 4AGEs was the Formula Atlantic engine. It was a modified version for a small open-wheel formula car.
Okay.
And that was the holy grail of 4AGEs, and it made 190 horsepower.
Which was absurd for the time.
It was. You know, that was fully modified, like insane-o parts, you know?
For the 80s and 90s, those are Honda numbers for a four-cylinder.
Right. But anyways, the point is, though, if you own one of these cars and you do want to restore it or keep it, you know, you don't want to just turn it into a drift slut, which I would appreciate people that don't do that. We only have so many of these chassis left. Please save some of them.
At least one or two.
Yeah, come on. Gazoo Racing has you covered. And I'm excited for like this kind of program. Like the continuation models like the Cosworth we just talked about or the Jaguars and stuff like that. That's cool. I'm glad they exist.
Right.
But it's for a bunch of rich people to store the car in their garage and never drive it.
They're exclusively collector's items.
Exactly.
You're not going to see somebody. I mean, maybe. I hope Jeremy Clarkson buys one of those, because then we will see it tearing around a track sideways.
Well, we'll see it tearing around Clarkson's farm in season 3.
That's true. There we go.
Or season 2.
In the dirt.
Yeah.
But you're right. It'll spend most of its time in the garage.
Yeah.
But with these stuff like this, even with these exorbitant prices, you know, it's mostly regular people who own these. And they were always a champion of, you know, it's the working man's drift car.
True. I mean, we're talking about how like, oh man, these things are so expensive. They're still only like 12 Gs.
Right.
You know,
it's just a lot for what it is.
It is, you know.
And historically, it's a lot.
When you can get a Fiesta ST or... Yeah, that's getting into used FRS.
Yeah, 15 BRZ. Grand?
Yeah.
You can get something with boost and power to the rear wheels.
Right. So it's like there are other options. So nostalgia better be playing a hard, like, hard part in this decision.
I paid $2,200 for mine.
Yeah. And bro, I paid $1,800 for my Miata back in the day.
Yeah. See,
like a working Miata.
And everything is so expensive now.
Yeah. I mean, of course, inflation is a thing too, but yeah, the JDM tax is real.
Yeah, it's sad because it used to just be the drift tax.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear more about that, I have an article I wrote on our website.
Yeah. Yeah, we're diving into that even more. But yeah, no, Nissan's making parts. Mazda's making parts for the Miata. Toyota is making parts now. Who else needs to get on board with this? Mitsubishi.
You know, some old Myvec stuff would be nice.
I was thinking some 4G63, you know. Yeah. That wasn't quite Myvec at that point.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking there's... The 4G63 is really, really popular, and that one, you know, is clearly the more ubiquitous.
Yeah.
But for the few people who own a 4B11 car...
Yeah.
It's like being able to get those parts would be really helpful.
Yeah, I bet you those parts are drying up too already.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would suck.
Yeah,
those cars aren't that old at this point.
Yeah, they're not even that old. But if you blow up your Evo 10, you're kind of screwed.
Have you seen that Evo 9s are going for like 40 Gs?
It doesn't surprise me, but that's really sad. Because Mitsubishis don't age well.
They really don't. Like, they don't. I mean, Mitsubishi is always like a killer technology and performance drivetrain,
right,
in an unreliable tin can chassis.
Yeah. Just you talk about people talk about old Subaru interiors being bad.
Yeah, no, Mitsubishi is terrible.
Yeah,
it'll squeak and rattle from the factory floor
from day one.
Yeah. But that's not why people liked them, of course.
No, they liked them because they're bonkers fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I loved the Evo 9. I remember even when I test drove a new one back when I was in high school, I was just like, you know, I don't think I'd ever buy a used one of these.
Yeah.
Just because the person who bought this did not treat it well.
Very true. And the few that did now are fetching just insane numbers.
Yeah, that's wild. I saw some of the Evo 3s and 4s are going for astronomical numbers now, too.
Yeah. Well, that makes a little more sense in America here because we didn't get those.
Yeah.
You know, so they're even rarer. And they have, like, even more, you know, it's got that same thing as, like, the GTR. It's got that forbidden fruit.
That's true. It's right-hand drive, and we never had it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, but I don't know. It's 40 grand for an Evo 9. It's like, there's a lot of cars I can buy for that money.
Yeah, even in the JDM market.
Right.
Like, you can get a GTR for 40 grand.
True.
You can get a Mark IV Supra for 40 grand.
Yeah, they won't be the best examples, but right. You could.
Yeah, you can get a running Mark IV Supra for 40 grand instead of that Evo. And even
that'd
even
be a hard kind choice.
Of, yeah, honestly, even a rough Mark IV, I think I'd take a rough Mark IV over an Evo 9.
I think I would too. But the Mitsubishi diehards are Mitsubishi diehards.
Right, and
so
they're awesome. The Mitsubishis, they were great cars. We were talking about the Eclipses last podcast.
Yeah, well, like, the first couple of gens.
Yeah, the 4G63 though, and what it can do. They are diehard. They're diehard fans for a reason.
Right. Yep. No, those are. I grew up around DSMs in Michigan. Like that was the tuner car of choice in the Midwest because we didn't really have Hondas. We didn't really have Toyotas, you know. So we didn't really have Nissans. But because of the partnership with Chrysler, the people around the Midwest that wanted to still kind of be true to, you know, domestic cars bought, you know, Plymouth Lasers or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the...
Because it was technically American.
Right. Because what was it? Mitsubishi Eclipse.
The Plymouth Laser and Plymouth Eagle Laser. Talon.
Eagle Talon. That's the other one.
Yeah, and the Eagle was also American.
Yeah. I mean, technically, the Eclipse was American too. They didn't sell those in Japan. We talked about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... I got to give Mitsubishi credit. You got to give Mitsubishi credit for keeping Dodge alive.
That's true. They kept Dodge alive until Mercedes stepped in and then Fiat stepped in.
Yeah. Somebody's always got to step in. Yeah. Renault stepped in at some point with Jeep.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you can get a Renault-powered Jeep.
Wow. That sounds horribly unreliable. Right? Like, it's like, all right, so we took the least reliable American chassis and we put a French motor in it.
Yeah. What can go wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But that's how Jeep do. Well, I think we did it, Chris. I think we got through all the topics we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we got through all the news.
Unless you want to talk about this guy flipping a go-kart in Colorado.
I want to talk about this. This is ridiculous.
Okay, let's talk about this real quick, and then we'll call it a day.
All right.
I'll just read the headline. Man flips go-kart during joyride, returns to steal go-kart, returns again, and gets arrested in Colorado.
And, you know, when you scroll down... It's a heavy-set, one-armed man.
Yeah.
So, this guy is distinctive looking.
Right?
And he tried to steal a go-kart, which he already had a car. He had a truck. They left in a truck the first time.
Yeah.
So, for some inexplicable reason, he tried to steal a go-kart with one arm.
Yeah.
Flipped it over, understandably.
Yeah. He tried to drive it away.
And this is for people who... are unfamiliar with the Denver area. This Murdoch's is right on Parker Road.
Right.
In Parker, Colorado. It's a busy area. There's no way you can merge in a go-kart.
And you're just going to like putz down some tractor trail and be gone.
Right.
You know, no, you're in the city in a go-kart.
Right.
Where are you going to go, bro?
And he really wanted this go-kart, apparently.
Yeah, because he came back again and... Yeah. Like, the employees right away recognized him.
But that was the third time, right? He came back twice.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That was the third time he came back. Yeah.
He tried three times to steal this go-kart.
You know, I will give the man credit. He's got drive.
That's true.
You know, there's very few things I would fail at that many times. That spectacularly and continue to return.
To the same place. There's other places with go-karts.
There's other Murdochs.
Yeah. There's even other Murdochs.
Oh my god.
Oh man, that's great.
I just, some people, man, I just can't. This is the picture. I love the picture. And of course you'll be able to see this, go to the show notes.
Yeah.
It's like mid flip this go-kart on a security cam.
It's awesome that they saved that image and gave it to the news.
Right.
He's on his head.
It's so bad. Oh, so lesson learned, don't try to steal a go-kart three times in a row from the same place.
Yeah, steal it once.
Yeah, and then move on to a new place.
Yeah.
Then again, you know, the smart criminals, we don't hear about them.
That's true. You don't end up in the news.
Right.
Just, oh, wow, this was missing, and right. Now it's gone.
All right. That's going to do it for us today, Heretics. I want to thank every one of you for listening. Numbers still slowly ticking up there. If you enjoy the show, spread the word. Keep those numbers ticking up. We greatly appreciate it. If you want to interact with us, you can find us at religionofspeed.co on Instagram and Facebook. Subscribe to us on YouTube. I've actually got some video work I'm doing this weekend, so hopefully by the time you hear this, there will be a new video up.
Nice. Is that the Pikes Peak video?
No, I've kind of given up on the Pikes Peak video.
Okay.
I think I talked about that before. I was just like, I was editing it, and I'm like, this doesn't capture like the feeling of being there.
Okay.
And I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it any injustice.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know,
it's an event with a lot of majesty.
It is. So I've learned a lot. Next year, hopefully I'll be able to capture it a little bit better. No, I'm going to be talking about, the time an Italian designer tried to work with JDM cars.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's
fun.
And they came up with a couple weird creations. I'll just say that. Let's see. What else do I got to promote here? I think that's it. Besides,
well, we need to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song Colors off the album Traveler Part 2. And
yep.
You can find them at Wheels the Band at bandcamp.com.
I love that you've just taken that over.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. That's mine now.
You stole it. It's yours. You took ownership of it. I'm cool with it. All right, heretics, that's going to do it for us today. Peace out.